Today's show is brought to you by Cufflinks.com, our presenting sponsor. Go to Cufflinks.com and use code GOT20 to get 20% off all officially licensed Game of Thrones products. Whatever sigil you wave, you'll find it. Tie, cufflinks, hand of the king or hand of the queen pins, whatever you want, you got it. Go to our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com/DVR today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Podcast Winterfell, the fan roundtable for The Last of the Starks, Season 8, Episode 4. And that's right, I'm here with a special guest. I got one guest right now. One's probably joining in a little bit. And right now, we're just going to get into it. We got our first guest. Introduce yourself. Who's here?
Hey, it's Jim from Canada, man. How's it going, Tim?
Very good. Jim from Canada's in the house. Longtime friend of the show. What's going on?
Not much, man. Just looking forward to chatting with you about the show and, you know, counting down the last two episodes, unfortunately.
Oh, two episodes. Well,
yeah. It's been almost a decade, right, of... you know, getting attached to all these characters and then slowly seeing them kind of die off or, you know, make mistakes and triumph and fail and fall in love and fall out of love and all that stuff. So it's been a fun ride and I'm looking forward to the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I'm feeling you. I liked it, but it's making me sad as we're winding down because it's a lot of what. And hope we get it.
Yeah, it was one of my, you know, I put it up there. I know online, excuse me, the episode's getting a lot of flack, you know, for, you know, just kind of unexplained turns and twists and stuff like that. But it was one of my favorite episodes. I mean, I'm looking at it more as a continuation of 1, 2, 3, and 4. Like, I'm trying not to look at it as a single episode, and I'm enjoying the season tremendously so far, man. I'd give this episode... You know, again, we'll save the 10 out of 10 hopefully for the last episode, but we'll go with a 9 out of 10, man. No colors, but, you know, just a straight up 9 out of 10.
Ah, that's funny. I like it. 9 out of 10. That for you, you know, that's a pretty big rating. I know you're tough on the show, so I'm feeling that. And since Axel got me into Gundam, I broke out of paint here, and this is the paint color that I'm going to give the rating. And I gave it a flat red, the XF7 Tamiya color. That's it. That's what I gave it.
Yeah, red's my favorite color, so I'll go with it.
Well, I gave it red because I see a lot of flames in people's eyes. I see a lot of hatred coming out. I see a lot of humanity fucking shit up again, as usual. And... You know,
are you talking about the viewers or the show?
You know what? Everybody.
Everybody, yeah. Yeah, it's a polarizing season, it seems, man. But, you know, you got to give the show credit, right? They're wrapping things up. They're, you know, closing all these story arcs and we're just kind of getting to the end. So, you know, like Bran said in episode 1, I think it was, we don't have time for this, right? Just get to the meat and potatoes and let's see what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, we got a few scenes of people talking about how we're probably going to screw things up in the end anyway. And, you know, kind of a harsh reality. And we also have some hope on the other side. So it's going to be interesting the last two episodes. But we got a good episode here that we got to unpack. And we're going to do it Podcast Winterfell style. That's right. If you want to get on, we got two episodes left. I got one episode booked already with one guest, but I got some room for more. Hit us up either with feedback, tell us you want to be on the show, what you like about the show at podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. And we can talk, get you on. Maybe, you know, Jim might be on again. We can talk this Game of Thrones, you know. Also, Winterfell Pod at Twitter and DVRpodcast.com. You know, that's where we're at. So we got YouTube chat open, me and Jim talking. We were waiting for John. Hopefully he'll be in a little while. I got Queen C next to me, little Cersei, and some things to talk about. So, John, you know, while we got some time here, I want to know, you know, first off the bat, let's hit it hard. What do you think about Daenerys? What do you, as far as her power struggle, just the power in general, not her love, other motives, her power.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to take it back to last season when Lady Olenna told her, stop listening to all these people and just be the dragon. You know what I mean? I think she's kind of getting to the point where she's tried diplomacy. She's tried being soft-handed, you know, giving people options. And I think we're going to see that turn next episode, right? However, I do believe that at the end of the episode or the end of the battle, whatever it may be, she will save the people. She won't necessarily sacrifice all those people. Like, she won't turn true Mad Targaryen. So I think there will be like a redeeming aspect to her. And, you know, they'll probably surprise us with something out of the blue in a sense. But I see the rage building up, but I think she'll be able to control it.
Huh. All right.
Yeah. You know, like, and you got Tyrion and Varys. They're kind of trying to, you know, eventually pull her from each side. You know, she's good. She's not good. Give her a chance. We gave her a chance. So I think it's just, you know, it's interesting as a viewer to just kind of, you know, you almost don't know which way to root for her, right? You're like, I like Jon. Yeah, he would be a good king. But on the other hand, Daenerys has kind of made all this happen with Jon, obviously. So I think we're going to see a total contrast in her next episode where she's going to go full Mad Targaryen, but then she's going to bring it back and reel it back in to do the right thing.
I'm not sure how she's going to break this mad spell. That one scene when they were at that, you know, celebration type, you know, mornings period, she was so jealous at the end that everybody split up and everybody had their little pack and nobody was friends with her. You know, even Missandei, you know, and Grey Worm were in their own world. And Varys, you know, looking was kind of like how we should be looking. And I, after rewatching, I don't disagree with what Varys is saying to Tyrion. And I really wonder, you know, what Daenerys is going to do. How she's going to gain the respect of the people. Now she lost another dragon. You know, and apparently everybody just turns to Jon. And it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be easy for her. But, you know, the opening scene where they're all celebrating and, you know, kind of gearing up towards Jon there and, you know, king, and, you know, Mad King would ride a dragon, you know, how, what's the name, Tormund says. I think she feels, like you said, isolated. But I also think that, like, it's, I'm thinking more like Sansa's approach, right? I think it was a real dick move on her part, first of all, to kind of not support the troops with her. And then Jon had to stand up and, you know, kind of contradict what Sansa's saying, and he had to kind of put his foot down on the ground. You know, people see that, right? The authority is being questioned, and she doesn't have the full support. But I don't know, man. I see her just redeeming herself somehow during the battle. She might only have what she has in terms of support. I don't necessarily think she'll get more support. There's no time for that. But I think she'll do something during this last battle where she'll have the option of pretty much destroying everybody, including the civilians, but she'll just find another way to just, you know, win without killing everybody. That's what I'm hoping for anyways.
I mean, it's going to be hard.
It will, yeah. She's lonely, right?
You know, I hope she doesn't go mad because I don't want to see that. I want to see the wheel broken. But everything to this point even when she makes her speech about Gendry and, you know, shall we rule without fear and I forget what she says, tyranny or something like that. But what she's doing is making people scared and putting the fear back into people and doing exactly the madness.
Well, but I think that's only what we see when, for example, when Tyrion and Varys and Sansa have their private conversation. I don't necessarily think that's what people think. Because, again, you know, they've heard about how she's freed the slaves. She brought her dragons north. They fought the White Walkers. I mean, I don't think that's the people's view. I think that's just the main characters building that tension, right? So I don't think that's the overall view of who she is. But they might be pushing her towards that, like that her advisors might be making her obviously feel that way, and she might take that step forward, right?
You know, I hope so, because, you know, she's got good people around her. And one of the themes I'm going to bring up later is about love and how I think, you know, a lot of hearts are broken and crazy stuff happened revolving love. So we'll see. We'll see.
But let me ask you something. You know, remember that scene at the beginning of first couple of seasons? I mean, it might have been one, might have been two. I don't remember. Where she goes into the Iron Throne and it's all dusty and, you know, it's either snow or ash is falling and it's destroyed.
Okay.
Do you think so? They've been doing a lot of callbacks, obviously, right? And I think that's a big one that they'll probably come back to. Do you think that's her destroying it? We know it's not winter anymore. You think it's her destroying it and then she walks in, or do you think it's Cersei has destroyed it and then she walks in?
Well, first thing, you said it's not winter anymore. It's still winter. Winter is still on its way.
You're right, you're right. Yeah, but I just meant that like it wouldn't be the White Walkers that are the reason why the, you know, the Iron Throne is destroyed. I think it's safe to say it's fire now, whether it's wildfire or dragon fire, I'm not sure. What do you think?
At this point, I'd say it's most likely gonna have to be the wildfire inside King's Landing. Somehow, maybe the dragonfire sets it off, ignites it, and it's a mistake, but or maybe that's part of the wheel getting broken. It's too hard to call at this point. Right now, I kind of said I was up for anything at this point, and I kind of am still. I don't know what to believe. I don't know where to go. Everybody's so hard to read, and as much as I thought I had things figured out or like a way I wanted it to go, I'm kind of okay with wherever it goes. I just don't want to see her go mad and fit that whole trope again. I want to see something a little richer.
Yeah, and that's why I think she'll step over that line, but then I think she'll bring herself back. That's what I'm trying to say, right? Like, she won't go, she'll go mad in terms of just all out assault, but I think she will pull herself back in so she
That's what I'm
doesn't
trying to say,
cause
right?
all the damage to just the regular folk, right? But like you said, you know, that's what makes it a great episode and the setup is you don't really know which way she's going to go, especially being down to one dragon. You know, a smaller army in a sense. And now she just kind of got bitch slapped in front of everybody, right? So her blood must be boiling if it wasn't already.
Yeah, and you know, the fact, here's another part. Did you find it weird that whole speech during the funeral pyre that John gave it? Do you think that was fitting?
I mean, it was pretty much the same speech they give up at the wall when, you know, somebody dies. You know,
Not in that sense, that the queen should have given it.
oh, I see what you mean. So this is the tricky part, right? So I think she's showing the respect to people so people can see that she is respectful of customs and traditions and stuff like that. But at the same time, because of that, her close inner circle is taking that as almost like she's taking a back seat to John, right? So it's one of those odd things where, again, I think outwardly, like the viewing audience can kind of see it that she's being respectful. That's what I think anyways, but I think her inner circle sees it as weakness, right? So yeah, I think she should have done a little bit more during that opening scene just to kind of stamp her authority a little bit more.
Yeah, to me that was setting the tone almost like this is what's going to happen. And, you know, you're going to see basically her lose power, or are they doing that misdirection thing? So I'm kind of, this is why it's such an open question, and I don't think either of us can have an answer. It's more of what we'd want and from what we've, you know, observed of her.
I think it's more misdirection, just based on kind of how the show approaches some things, right? So I think it's one of those, similar to how Arya disappeared for the last 10, 15 minutes of the last episode, and then suddenly she just appears and, you know, kills the Night King, which I loved, by the way. I thought it was great. But, yeah, I think it's more towards misdirection than anything else.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole, I'm tired a little bit of the Sansa and her not getting along, because I feel the conversation that they had should have resolved it. And even though they were both stubborn, like, they should have figured out a way to get a, you know, kind of work that out. Because even though, you know, Robert Baratheon got Ned Stark together and they overthrew the Targaryens, there was a long time that the Targaryens and the Starks held peace. So why wouldn't this be some sort of okay thing? Why is it like so taboo?
Yeah, I'm hoping, like I said, man, I'm disappointed in Sansa's character's decisions this episode. Like, I get it that, you know, she's been taught by Littlefinger. She learned from Cersei. You know, she's definitely grown as a character, and you can see how she's confident in most of the things she does now. But like you said, there's really no reason for her to be against Daenerys at this point. I mean, wanting to separate the North from the rest of the kingdoms, in a sense, you know, it can wait. You know, it's something you can hash out after. Again, the North is huge. It's too far from, you know, King's Landing. It's not necessarily something that Daenerys would come back and attack anyways. So, you know, just put it on the back burner. I was really hoping that, you know, like you said, that grudge would go away and she would just try to help them out. Because at one point, Daenerys said, how long do your soldiers need to rest? And Sansa pretty much says, well, I don't know. I'll let you know when I find out. Like, you know, that kind of decision, it disappointed me, because I was hoping that, you know, she would show a little bit more support. And that would get her favor later on, right? Perhaps where after everything ends, if Daenerys wins, you know what? You supported me. Yeah, fine. Let's come up with a compromise of the North rules itself type of thing. So, yeah, I was really hoping that that grudge would kind of die down a little bit.
Right. You know, and another thing, the resting thing. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
How long were we supposed to believe it took them to make all those funeral pyres, stack all those bodies, and still be not exhausted? Like, Danny has to have known they've got to be shot. That, you know what, one night of rest and drinking. All right, we're good to go. Like, they're all mentally screwed up, and we're, you know, Danny should have had a little compassion there. You know, they made us wait and believe so many different formats of time, slowness, or, you know, the way it would speed up and people would travel, and we're supposed to believe like next episode they're there. Well, why couldn't we just believe a month went by? Why did that have to be so, like, important? It's just, they're playing with us. They're showing us this cat and mouse for some reason, and I'm not sure I like it.
Yeah, it's the difficult part of, you know, falsely building up tension, right? Like, you're right. It's realistically, you'd say, you know, we just had the biggest battle of the world ever, you know, and tomorrow we're going to go fight the second biggest battle. So, yeah, they should have given it more time to just, but again, it built up tension for the next part, right? Where Sansa kind of reveals Jon's secret to Tyrion, and, you know, she's trying to manipulate things behind the scene. So, yeah, it's tricky, man. Time was always a tricky thing with the show, but
Right. And now they're in a rush. They're like, oh, we got two episodes after this one. Let's feed it up. You know, I don't know. I would have bought it. Cersei has plenty of time to wait. I got Daenerys's point of, you know, what'd you say? She'll just get stronger, I guess, with the longer we wait.
Yeah, and I don't think that's true, obviously. I mean, I think she has all her strengths that she has, right? So, yeah, they could have played it off as, you know, 2 weeks went by, everything is settled, let's kind of pack up and go now. It
I
would have been
mean,
nice to see that.
yeah, they had all that time to make those gigantic, you know, spike arrows. Those, I don't even know what you'd call those projectiles. You know, so apparently they fit all those boats with them, you know. So they had a lot of time if we look at it that way. But,
Yeah.
and the battle we know didn't take that long. I don't know.
Yeah, you just kind of have to suspend your disbelief in a sense, right?
Yeah, I'm just kind of trying to piece in where Danny should be, where she should be like lining these pieces up. Because it's, I want to see it work, but it's, they're forcing it to seem like it's not gonna.
Yeah, it's I, like I said, I think they're creating tension that doesn't have to be there. But again, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I watch the show with my wife and she has a totally different perspective on this just as a casual viewer. It works for her, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know, they did this, oh no, they did that, oh, they're running out of time. Whereas, you know, for us that are a little bit more into the show, you know, these things kind of trip things up a little bit for us. So I think you just gotta, you know, go roll with the punches, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm not nitpicking it, but I'm just trying to figure it out more. 'Cause I, you know, after watching it again, it's just everything's starting to seem a little bit out of character. Now, are they all still in shock? You know, that's another thing. Is Dany rushing it so much because of all she saw, and now she's bugging out about the John thing and her lineage and what's going to get out? So there's a lot I can forgive the way she's acting, but it just makes me a little nervous of why, you know, they're going to make her go through that. Because she seems like, you know, a fitting character we've been rooting for to just
Yeah.
blow all that.
Well, it's interesting, like you just brought up, there's the whole Jon's a Targaryen. She's lost, you know, she, at that point, she lost one of her dragons. You know, she came to help the North, but the North's not necessarily going to fully back her. So yeah, I think it's good character buildup, right? Like it's like you said, there's so many conflicting things going on in her mind. She's, in a sense, all by herself, you know, and. Yeah, I think she'll like I said, that's how I think it leads down to her going full mad Targaryen, but then again, she's gonna pull it back, I think, and do the right thing.
Yeah, I hope so. But now we
Yeah.
got this whole conflict with Varys. So let's kind of jump to that
Yep.
Varys and Tyrion convo. So.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if Varys has already set things in motion. I mean, the way he's speaking with Tyrion there in the second scene where they're talking about treason openly, right? First of all, I'm kind of surprised that Tyrion just kind of let it slide in a sense. Okay, you do your thing, I'll do mine, and we'll see who wins almost. That I was hoping Tyrion would put his foot down a little bit, his hand of the king, queen, sorry. But yeah, I'm not sure if Varys has already set things in motion. It sounds like he has, right? I mean, he had the resources. I don't know if he still has access to any of his, you know, spy networks and all that stuff, but yeah, I don't know, man. He seems like he's losing his trust in her.
Yeah, and now they're showing us the Varys thing, and I'm not really sure I like it. So,
And don't forget, Melisandre said he's going to die in this country just like she said she would. So, you know, it could be leading up to that too,
right.
where he gets caught.
I've always been on the side of what Varys and kind of Littlefinger were always setting up, and Varys always had the best intentions, and he always led me to believe that was true. It was never like, oh, he's bullshitting, he's, you know, rooting for this one, that one, because he's flip-flopped a lot, but it's always been in the best interest of like the little person.
Right.
So now though, it's like he's right, but he could also like be a catalyst to make it not right. He can also fix this. Like, he doesn't have to just jump ship. He's in a position to help. So why does it always automatically flee to the next viable option without really getting your hands dirty and making big suggestions?
Yeah, and I thought about that too. I thought about, you know, 5 minutes ago you didn't know about John's lineage, so you would have supported Danny full on out, and now suddenly you're jumping ship in a sense, right? So yeah, I was hoping there'd be a little bit more complexity there, like let's give it one more try, and then if not, then we have to try it my way. You know, if they kind of came to that agreement, Varys and Tyrion, I think it'd be a little bit more satisfying than just, all right, well, you try your thing, I'll try mine, and we'll see what works in the end.
Right. So, again, I always like that Varys stuck up for everybody, but I don't know why, you know, he's jumping ship right away. And Tyrion is another one. He's like sad about everything.
Yeah, he has to redeem himself somehow, man. He has to, there's got to be a point where you see him now, he's drinking more, and even Varys said it, right? You're drinking a lot now. And he, you know, again, obviously I don't know what it is, but there has to be some redeeming point where, you know, Tyrion kind of makes up for all his mistakes so far. And I think with him going up to Cersei at the wall there and kind of speaking to her candidly, I think we're going to see that as well. Like with Daenerys, where he got pushed to his limit and now it's time to kind of go full, you know, cunning, like his father used to call me, a little cunning liar and treacherous little beast. I think Tyrion's going to go Mad Targaryen as well with Daenerys, just to kind of prove that together that they'd make a good kind of pairing, right?
Well, it seems again, that way. And, yeah. You know, speaking of all mad and lunatic, we got the man not from Canada, but almost from Canada. John's in the house. John finally got with us. Welcome, John. He's at a loss for words, I think. Well, John's here in the room. Hopefully he'll get down and say something when he's ready. But we got the three of us now. But yeah, so if, you know, especially now with the Bronn thing, you know, we'll get to that full-on thing. But with Tyrion knowing that, you know, he might be going full-on nut job. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think just not so much nut job, but using his cunning, you know what I mean? Like he was always the clever guy. And, you know, he's reaching his desperate point where he has to do something cunning and clever to kind of win back the trust of Daenerys. And I think we'll see that next episode.
I hope so. Because
yeah.
He's been such a sad sack all season. And he finally says that one thing in the room, that they'll all be all right. Maybe we'll live this. And they do. And we want it to come true that, like, everything's going to be good. And everything's so sad.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe he'll be confronted with, you know, it seems like he's always hesitant to kill Cersei, right? You know, it's in the end, it's still a sister, but I think he'll just kind of switch those gears and say, you know what, screw it. She sent Bronn to kill me and Jaime, so clearly she doesn't care about us. Although she could have killed him at the gates there, I guess, but. Yeah, I think he's going to snap in a sense, right, and go back to his old cunning self and redeem himself.
Well, while you're speaking about cunning, let's talk about this one part. You know what? Hold on one second. While we're here, we got some people in the chat. I just want to say hello to before we get into this next thing. Let's see. We got Amanda Kane, Fandom D. Saint, John Lee, Shayna Mason, Roman Carmen, John Lee, and Podcast Winterfell. Yeah, they said hello, talking about how they're talking about the crossbow, various for the realm.
Yeah, right, following cool. everybody.
Yeah, they're following us, and I think John might be here. If he gets his technical things happening, John from Almost in Canada, Jim from Canada, and Tim from
Can LA. You guys hear me?
Yes, we got sound. John's awesome. Here.
Sorry, guys. Sorry about being so late.
Ah, it's all right. You know, Walder Frey was late. You could be late. So, all right. We talked about Daenerys' power struggle. And that's pretty much the main topic we hit. So I'm going to give it to you. The floor is yours. And, you know, start there if you want to give a little rating if you like. If not, just jump in.
Sounds good. I'd say overall I'd give it a 9. I was pretty happy with the episode. In terms of I think there's lots of small moments throughout the whole thing that were really great. So I mean, just like so many little meetings, little conversations that happen here and there, especially in Winterfell before we actually got to the more action aspect of the show. But yeah, no, I thought it was a pretty solid episode. I don't have any really of the complaints that a lot of other folks had.
Excellent. All right. So as far as Daenerys, do you think she's losing her power? Like the everything she's gaining, do you think that she's losing her mind? Where do you think this is all going? Do you think she's going to grab it again, or she's going to have to forcefully grab it? Give us some Daenerys stuff.
Well, I mean, to me, there was so many scenes there where she was like, especially like I think about when she's talking with John, like I don't know if it was back in their room or whatever, but she shot him a couple looks there that were killer, especially when she, you know, really got into saying that, you know, she's the rightful heir, you know, the rightful queen. And she looked pretty intense when she was trying to demand from John to, not tell anybody about the secret, right? So I think she's losing it, you know what I mean? You could kind of see, like, it's just, like, draining out of her, all of her power, you know, and she's going to start acting out because of it. So she's kind of insecure in that sense.
Oh, insecure is a good way to bring it up because, you know, that's something I guess we were alluding to but didn't get to. That's a good word for it. And I feel like even if she does act out, she has the dragon, and we figured out, you know, half of each section of the army with her. You know, if she bugs out on her own, say, she has something behind her, but she could lose that very easy. So I feel like diplomacy here is the better method. But, you know, me and Jim kind of then folded it into the Varys thing. Varys could have been the one to help her go forward with that a little more. You know, Missandei pushed her to like fight a little bit more instead of diplomacy, because that's kind of all they knew is violence over there. And Varys is kind of jumping ship, it seems. So who's gonna ground her, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think Varys, like, we had those kind of hints that it was going to be coming, right? That from last season, that he put those kind of conditions on how he was going to support her. And, you know, it's all come to fruition. And to me, it looks like every indication he's going to turn on her to some degree. I can't imagine right now exactly how it's all going to play out, but you could really see it in his conversation with Tyrion when they were kind of hanging out together there. I don't know. I mean, now I don't trust him. And it could make for a really interesting upcoming episode for sure.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not sure who to trust, where it's going, because at this point, I could see it shifting in any direction, you know, towards Winterfell, towards, say, Jon, towards Dany, towards Cersei, towards a straight-up left-field faction that we have no idea about, because we still have Yara holding the Iron Islands. We don't know how well that's going. There's so many things at play, but, you know, we were kind of just seeing where this is going with Dany, because she's acting so funny. First, she's drinking, you know, first I brought up that she skipped the speech at the funeral. So she let Jon take control, and, you know, me and Jim kind of chalked it up to being a northern thing. Then she's drinking Starbucks at the party. Everybody else drinking wine. Everybody else is, you know, chatting it up. She does the Gendry thing. Here you go. Here's Lance. Smart move. But then everybody leaves her. She's all alone. So I could see that fire in her eye. Like, no one likes me here. I don't belong here. What am I doing here? And then to jump down Jon's throat and almost demand, would she say, I never begged for anything in my life? That's not too noble. And, you know, if she even knew Jon and loved Jon like she says she does, she would know Jon doesn't go for lies and deceit. You know, since he knew that. Oh, update. Jon will be in the room. Oh, no, he's in. All right, cool. That's updates late. So, you know, it's just tough. It's going to be the way she wins the people, the way she wins this thing might be through more violence. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure where to go other than moving on. And, you know, we kind of talked about it, all three of us there, but let's go about it from the Jon point. So she sees Jon. She says, you know, I beg you, don't tell anybody. And knowing Jon, obviously Jon runs and tells. And, you know, but he swears, which Jon is super loyal, just like Ned, just like the Stark should be, to his sisters, don't say anything. We really don't know exactly what Bran said, but we're pretty sure the true story. Here you go. What's the next thing that leading into the conversation we were just talking about? Tyrion and Varys talking about it. After Sansa tells Tyrion. So that didn't last long. And it's exactly how Dany said. And it's the opposite of what Jon wanted. And this right here could be the trigger for Dany.
Yeah, I mean, to me, she seems like she's on the edge. Obviously, from, you know, the Missandei getting killed. But she was already right there on the edge. So, I mean, it's not going to take anything for her to go off right now. Hopefully, Tyrion and when Jon finally gets down there, he can calm her down some. It's really hard to know what way the story is going to go right now. I mean, she could go all full, burn them all to the ground. She could, at the last minute, come up with a more sophisticated plan. You know, I mean, it's really a question right now. I mean, it's that and that part of it, I think the writing has been great, because we got two episodes left right now, and I have no idea how it's all going to play out in the end.
Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with Jon. Like I said, I think she was teetering on the brink there. And again, just similar to Jon's concept that she will go, I think, full Targaryen, like I said before, but she'll pull it back just in time to not cause harm to all the regular folk, right? So I think that's how she kind of completes her arc there. But, you know, it's like we've been saying, she's alone, she's got nobody she could trust. You know, her acting, you know, kind of thinking of the episode as a whole, when she was begging Jon, you know, was tremendous, right? She really kind of, they don't really let her kind of get out of her Dracarys character a lot, but, you know, you could see that she was so desperate at that moment, and, you know, asking the one person she trusts fully at this point. And then it was interesting that it was Jon that pulled back while they were kissing there. And, he was the one that kind of stopped that relationship in that moment. And you know, you could see how that's where she switched over and said, you know what, I gave you the choice of how to make it better. You know what you have to do.
Yeah. And John, in my eyes, did the right thing, but she wanted to be deceitful. So right there shows the madness settling in. And I started thinking, you know, about what we saw after with John. You know, we saw this really beautiful scene of Sam and the pregnancy thing and him figuring it out, we're going to name it after you. And when he said John, I thought it was kind of weird too, because his name's not really John, but that's irrelevant. And then I thought about the Tormund scene and him saying goodbye, giving up Ghost. And then all this stuff we're talking about with Danny, well, the cat's out of the bag. What's the next best move? You got to take him out. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a. I don't see that happening. I don't see Daenerys taking out Jon. I could possibly see. Again, I kind of always thought that ultimately Jon is going to survive, but make his way back up north and, in a sense, rebuild the wall. I know there's really no need for it, but who knows what's going to happen. Just, I have a feeling Jon, you know, again, he doesn't want to be king. And I think he'll just give it up to her. The only other alternative I see is, you know, again, it comes out, they're both Targaryens, they marry just like they used to, aunt and, you know, cousin, brother, sister, all that stuff. And, you know, they rule the kingdom kind of peacefully and make some big changes along the way. But those are the only two endings I see for Jon. I don't see him dying, though.
So, Jim, I could totally agree, because when you see that Tormund and Jon scene, there's totally a sense there that this is not their last meeting, right? Like, yeah. Tormund pretty much says that. So I think we're going to have them at the end of that last episode. If Jon survives, I think for whatever reason, he's going to go north. Whether it's beyond the wall or not, he's going to be north. And who knows who's going to be ruling altogether. I mean, right now, I think there's a really good chance Sansa will be actually the leader, you know, who's going to be ruling in some sense. And I think he's going to be north, and that's going to be kind of the bittersweet ending, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to talking about that scene with King's Landing all in ashes, you know, maybe they all burn and then we start over. It's like a plant growing through the crack.
Yeah, with that scene, I think that's where Daenerys realizes, you know, to be, you know, the rightful heir is the wheel, right? You know, and we've kind of mentioned this before, that to break the wheel, she has to be, in a sense, elected almost. Yeah, you might wipe out Cersei, you might, you know, win the war. I think that's where kind of Dany makes that change in the end where, you know what, I won, but I won't be your queen unless you want me to be your queen, right? And then, again, that's where I think Jon separates and says, you can be queen, heading up north. So I don't think Dany just kind of wins a throne. I think she wins a throne and then realizes at that moment, I'm just like everybody else, right? The throne is mine because of my name. Well, that's the wheel itself, right? To break it, you have to kind of switch over to like a democratic type of society. And I think that's where the change happens.
I mean, that's what we've wanted. You know, me and this guy, we know, Axel Giantsbane, got kind of laughed at when we were discussing that, you know, diplomacy in the last few episodes, and people are like, come on, that's going to suck. But that's what we need. And to talk about it, let's bring him on. Axel Giantsbane.
Can you hear me, DJ?
Oh, you sound beautiful, bud.
All right. Hey, John, how you doing, pal?
I'm doing great.
Good, buddy. Good to talk to you. Jim, how are you?
Super, super. Awesome.
Awesome. It's great to be here with y'all. Perry is putting the kid to bed, so I thought I'd jump on real quick because I have the link. How are you doing, DJ?
Doing great. We're having a good discussion. Started off me and Jim. John hopped on. And we just pretty much beat Daenerys's, you know, power struggle to death. And can I say something about that? Sure, go ahead.
Can I say really quick just about Daenerys? Because I was listening to you while I was in the shower. I heard a little bit of what you were talking about. And I just think that this whole thing with her, I know there's been a reaction kind of against her, I guess, like, you know, turning crazy or becoming the mad queen kind of thing, you know? And I just think that it was just so perfectly set up in the show. I don't really get why people aren't kind of like accepting it or saying it's sudden or anything like that. I think that it was perfectly established, going back to conversations she had with Selmy, Tyrion, even Dario approached her, Dario 2.0, and was like, yo, if you burn everybody, nobody's going to listen to you, you know? So she's had this struggle. It's been, and she has this amazing power, right? With great power comes great responsibility. So I just want to give the kudos to Dan and Dave and the writers and Emilia Clarke. I think that they've built this up perfectly. And when Missandei, spoiler alert, got her head chopped off at the end of the episode, I thought it was perfectly, she's going to the dragon. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that they've set this up really well. What Tormund said to Jon about to get on a dragon, you'd have to be a king or crazy, you know? She feels like other people think she's crazy, right? I mean, look at what she came from with her brother and then Khal Drogo and everything. So I'm just really enjoying it. And I think that was really well established. It's totally in line with what the character has given, maybe even too in line with what, because you know me, I'm a big fan of people acting hypocritically, irresponsibly, and against their interests in television shows, because that's like the basis of some of my greatest loves of TV, including like Better Call Saul, The Wire. You look at McNulty, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's a realistic character. So that's what I have to say about Dany.
So where does she go then? Like, with this development and maybe acceptance.
Suicide mission, baby. I think she's getting on that dragon, flying right into she's going to make that prophecy come true. And she's going to try to burn it all to the ground, and she's going to kill people. And I don't know what's going to happen, but maybe she even defeats Cersei. Or, you know, my old plan that Cersei escapes on a boat, and you get a reverse Blackwater, and she sets off wildfire and blows up all of King's Landing. And I don't know, maybe we're going to have a replay of, we're seeing so many of the same things we saw in Robert's Rebellion. I mean, look, Jon is set to take over Ned's role of walking in after it already happened. Jaime's on his way back to play the same role he played. Varys is still there, right? So I just think we're going to have, this next episode is going to be not good, Bob.
You know, I think part of the thing is that when people are upset that they think the storyline didn't get developed enough, that she's going to go crazy, it's just that they didn't really subtle storytelling in it, right? They didn't beat you over the head about it two seasons ago or three seasons ago. There was just little moments, little times where she, you know, hangs all the slave owners and goes against the advice of her council. And there's all the little moments. And then you kind of forget about it because, you know, you want Dany to free the slaves and you want to support her. But there's always these little moments along the way. And that's just what we're seeing today. I mean, it's just kind of built up a little bit more. It's not like right now she's crazy, you know, like she isn't making a fool of herself in front of everybody. Exactly. You're just seeing looks.
Yeah, John, I think you're absolutely right, buddy. She's not, it's not, I mean, I think there was an article that came out saying the problem with Dany's Mad Queen storyline or whatever. And it's like, you know, I mean, it's relating it to other stories. And I mean, honestly speaking, yes, that is a trope, right? That was a trope of like a whole segments of Hollywood films for many years, you know, and continues to be the trope of the woman's crazy. but everybody's crazy on this show.
Yeah, it's people. No matter what we do, we just keep repeating these cycles. She yeah. wants to break the wheel. She wants to, you know, bailish in the ladder. It's all the same shit, and we all keep fucking it up in one way or another. Yeah. And as much as we're trying, she's trying so hard to not be something. She just is. And I think this, you know, John not falling in love and losing that, and then this breaking connection, and Missandei dying, and then if she finds out John's old, it's a wrap.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, John telling Sansa and Sansa telling Tyrion and all that, I think may, as I said on the initial reaction with Gina last night, I was a little confused and thinking, if Varys was so upset that he was willing to tell Tyrion basically up to the point of I'm going to have her killed, right? Because what else is, like, Tyrion says, what becomes of her? And he says, this is all I'm comfortable speaking truthfully to you. Then why did he go to that meeting? And there was such a jump in time, right? From there to then all of a sudden we go to the meeting. When they've done that in the show before, that's like a little signal to us. Other things happened. If there was time to set up a meeting with Cersei, right? And I mean, not to get there because Dragonstone is right next to King's Landing, but there was time to kind of set that up. Then there's time for other things to happen. So I was kind of surprised that Varys let that happen. So I just think that maybe whatever action Dany takes here is going to have the resonance of those conversations and her relationship with John, because it is important to remember too. I don't know if I was listening to another podcast or something last night, but Varys said it in the show that for Dany, it's no big thing that's her nephew, but for John, you know, I think the reason he was pulling away from her wasn't because I'm the king and it's confusing. It's because he's like, oh my God, it's like making out with Aunt, what's her name? Lyanna or whatever, you know,
yep. Who Stark threw honor.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's right. She's effectively lost that love. I'm sorry. What's up, Jim?
Sorry to interrupt. After the episode, you know, those like 5-10 minute things, they do mention that that's why John is pulling back, because he just realized that as a Northerner, this isn't normal to be making out with your aunt, right? So you are correct. Yeah. The directors, Dave and Dan, both said that. That's the main reason why he's pulling back. So.
Oh, yes. And which totally makes sense.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. It's within his character, right? So,
yeah.
And that's where, with what John was saying earlier, and you, I think, even with Dany, they've set it up for us that she's going to take this next step into being a true Targaryen, right? But she's always made the right choice afterwards as well, where she, you know, she hung the masters in Meereen, but then she kind of had the truce with Hydro Loras or Razoraxxon, whatever the hell his name was.
She listened, you know. Jim, right?
Yeah. So she, I think she's gonna go full Targaryen, but she's gonna just pull back just at the right moment to show that I can be a Targaryen and I can still serve the people.
Well, are you saying you think she's not going to go like?
No, I think she will.
Oh, okay.
But I think that she'll stop just before she becomes like a true mad Targaryen. You know what I mean? Like, I think she'll use all her power that she can, dragons and all that stuff. But just before she's about to hurt the innocent people, I think that's when she'll kind of pull back just slightly enough to show everybody that she could be both. She could be a Targaryen and a good ruler, right?
I hope, you know what, man? I hope you're right. But I also think, Jim, that even if she does that, it may be very hard for Tyrion, Varys, Jon, other people to trust that she would do that again. You know what I mean? Like, how many times can you come to the line, kind of cross it, pull back, and then they're kind of thinking like, wait a second. We're trying to take down Cersei here, who is so volatile and always has to be handled. Dany's dad was like this. The last couple kings we've had, besides Tommen, Owen, I don't want to make fun of Joffrey too much. I don't want to upset Bubba and Catfish, but you know, Tommen was a good kid.
Yeah.
But they, well, with the opportunity. Oh, go ahead.
I think that's where she gets into her diplomacy after and breaks the wheel forever, right? Where she realizes, I did all this. We want to change it. I went all out Targaryen. I stopped just before I massacred people. Now I realize, you know what? I'm just as much the problem as everybody else. If you want me to be your queen, I'll be your queen. If not, we'll come up with a new system. I think that's kind of where it resolves.
I hope you're right, because I would like to see... I'm a fan of her actually at some point realizing that part of breaking the wheel is maybe that she is not Lord Emperor, Dragon Queen, Targaryen, just like Aegon, you know, that how are you going to break the wheel by completing the circle? That's making the wheel.
Yeah.
So
I think that's where the change happens.
Yeah, like it maybe, you know, they were trying to say things like maybe her and John can rule together. But then, you know, now people are kind of seeing John and they're like, yeah, but she'll overpower him. So, I mean, I don't know. I think Varys has set something in motion here and I think it might be too late. You know, I think he's made his decision and I don't know. I had some crazy thought of, that's why I had like that. I always wanted them to wear saddles. It would work better for this, but he already did something. Like he poisoned the dragon or hurt her or gave information or something where the only reason he went there and was so calm during everything and they love to telegraph things on this show and they have to. Yeah. It's a huge, big show for the general public.
They send ravens, not telegraphs.
Yes, they say, I'm sorry, they send ravens, visual ravens again and again, which I like because it lets you get into the story and you see it on the rewatch. And they didn't go to Varys, right? Like you'd think after that big speech where Danny, if I was directing it, and I know that Varys had just given this speech where he had effectively said that he wanted to commit treason and take out the queen to the hand of the queen, that when she was about to get on that dragon and all that stuff happened, I would have gotten a nice long close up of Varys looking at her, right? Or and then back to Tyrion, and then they look at each other, but they didn't do that, which makes me think that something else is going on, or I could be totally wrong. But listen, guys, I got to go say goodnight to the kid. I'm so glad that you all have participated in this. Hopefully, I'll be able to jump on again soon. Timbo, you the man.
Thanks for jumping on, brother.
Yeah, I hope everybody gets a chance to listen to my song. Don't worry.
I did. It was a good song. It was a good song.
Good. I'm thinking about writing a longer version, and maybe Matt can do some keyboards under it, and then DJ can do a remix of it after. So we'll see.
Start a new podcast. Lullabies from Beyond the Wall.
We could do a documentary, The Making of the Song.
We could have Joe Bear shoot it.
There we go.
Great. All right. Take care, John. Bye, Jim. Bye, DJ.
Thanks. Have a good one. Have
Bye,
good
everybody in the chat. Thank you. Taking a little mid-ad break here to remind you about our amazing presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Now, we talk a lot about the GOT, the Marvel, the NCAA, but Cufflinks.com has amazing brands like Ox and Bull. Check it out. This is wearable art. You wear this anywhere and someone will stop and say, hey, what's that? Even if it's not a Hand of the King or Hand of the Queen pin, it looks amazing. Go to cufflinks.com and use code DVR20 today.
Royalty right there. Podcast royalty jumping in. I like what he had to say. I mean, we could break this down. Everybody's got so many crazy angles of how they're going to work with whoever becomes in power. But let's take a look at this. How about Bronn's decision. Now, power, you know, he had the power right there. He had the power to just wipe these two dudes out and be done with it, get back to King's Landing before they got back to there. Because Tyrion showing up with Daenerys basically showed that Bronn didn't do anything. We don't know. She doesn't know about Jaime. She didn't have a full conversation, you know, that we saw. So What's with Braun? Was it a waste? Are you guys dissatisfied? Because I kind of, the way he came at them, he could have been a little cooler, a little more suave that we know Braun, but he was a dick. I never really saw Braun be a dick like this. What do you guys feel?
I think that was one of the weaker scenes, be honest, because you're right. I don't think it was out of character for him. There was just kind of a weird vibe to the whole thing. But to me, a lot of it didn't ring true. So I agree with you on that for sure. I don't know where that's part of the storyline's going. I kind of don't feel like there's going to be any great payoff on it, you know, one way or the other, because I just think it's a part of the storyline that isn't relevant enough right now. But I'm not sure what Jim's opinion is.
Yeah, I think I took it more as Braun's at his wit's end, you know. I remember at one point he said, "This fucking family." Sorry about the swearing, but you know, I think he's at the point now where he's like, you know what? I have a much longer term, much more longer relationship with Tyrion and Jaime, and I'd rather not lose that relationship, right? And just give him a chance to just kind of do right by me. You know, you Lannisters have always been dicking me around, so I saw the point in it in that sense. But yeah, overall, I don't think we're going to see much of Bronn going forward, because I don't see him getting Highgarden, especially if Daenerys wins. But I think it was just Bronn being at his wit's end, being frustrated. You could see it was more like that, you know, that angry frustration that you guys need to just finally do this for me and then let's be done with each other. So, yeah, it was a little weird, though. It was definitely, you know, kind of out of place in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, he basically laid out a great plan that he could have started taking these people out one by one. Because if he got into Winterfell with this giant crossbow, snuck in, nobody knows who he is, got into their room, and you know, he could really do these things, go on, do it. Because if you could get that done, you got a sure winner. Bam. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't think he wanted to do it. I think he was just looking for a reason to not do it. That's you put it better than I did, Tim. So, yeah, I think he wanted a reason to not kill them. But he has to be Bronn, right? He has to be that cutthroat sellsword. He can't just come out and say, "Come on, guys, please. You know, we're friends, we're buddies. Help me out here." So that's kind of the approach that I think they took with it.
All right. So with that, then now I'm starting to think maybe there was something we didn't see, because, or a note that was dropped off that maybe he couldn't have said in person. Because with what Axel was saying a little bit, with Tyrion and them getting there and the time difference that we're not too sure of yet. What about Tyrion having maybe a backup plan with Cersei that we don't know about? Because I'm thinking this, like, so Bronn comes up and does his thing, maybe sneaks a letter, we don't know about, something shifty, and the tables turn. Tyrion maybe trying not to tip his hand with Varys. Maybe he's going for another angle, but doesn't want to show it to Varys because something's off. And I'm not really sure. Everybody feels weird. Now, Bronn didn't go through all this crazy battle that everyone else did that I'd attribute PTSD. You know, maybe seeing a dragon was a big deal for him, you know, in that one battle. I don't know. John, tell me something. Give me somewhere to go here with this.
Well, I don't know if I have much to add to the Bronn aspect of it, but I did have a part of the show that I don't know if you guys have talked about yet, but how about the fact we've got this group going back to King's Landing right now? So we got, you know, Arya and the Hound traveling together. We got Jaime, you know, a couple hours behind him or ahead of him. How do you think, what do you think's going to happen? I mean, there's so many different ideas I have in my head. Like, you know, I can obviously see, some face swap, and I think we're going to definitely see Arya do some kind of a face swap with somebody. And that could be Jaime in the end. You never know. Something could happen to Jaime, and she takes advantage of the situation, and she goes in as Jaime. You could have the Hound kill the Mountain. She takes off the Mountain's face. She becomes the Mountain and tries to get Cersei. I mean, there's so many different permutations you could get into, but I think it's going to be a pretty exciting part of the show.
Jim, take the first part of this, because I got a couple things to say.
Okay. So I'm going to kind of, going up John's point here, this is my picture of almost like a final end game for a couple of characters, right? So I'm thinking just a quick breakdown is, so Jaime makes his way to King's Landing, sneaks in somehow, meets up with Cersei. He ends up killing Cersei. Right after he kills her, the Mountain kills Jaime. As they're killing Jaime, the Hound is in there, starts fighting the Mountain. As the Hound is losing to the Mountain, Arya jumps in to save the Hound. In the process, she kills the Mountain, but gets injured, and then she dies for the Hound. There's my quick breakdown of those four characters ending. That's how I think the four of them finish up.
That's very neat and tidy.
Yeah. I'm picturing this one, like, hectic scene, you know what I mean? So, yeah, neat and tidy. There you go. And maybe that's how that show ends. But army-wise, it's tough to say, right? Because who knows how they're going to approach the battle itself, right? That's like John was saying earlier, it's kind of, we're at the point where it's unknown. And I'm enjoying that, I don't know. Is it going to be the army that does it? Is it going to be Daenerys that does it? I'm at a loss there. I don't even know where to begin to guess, which is good.
I'd be pretty shocked if they have, I think Arya is going to do an attempt, right, to kill Cersei. Like, something will happen, and maybe she does have Jaime's face on. But she knows Jaime so well that right when she's about to, do the deed, she turns, and next thing you know, Arya is on the floor in a pool of blood. That's the kind of thing that could easily happen. But I can't imagine Arya is actually going to get the kill on it. But you never know. And but I have a feeling it's going to be one of those ones where it's, she came so close, and that's going to be kind of the gut-wrenching end to that moment. And you never know. Maybe if that were to happen and the Hound's around, maybe the Hound will be the one to take out Cersei.
Yeah. Well, I don't know who's going to necessarily take out who, but I have more of a generalized feeling about the way you were talking about the army and who's marching. So we know, they left at different times. John took the army. But again, with Axel's time thing, now, like, how did that little group get in front of Cersei to parlay? And that was basically after that little battle. So after that little battle, where are still those troops? Like, did they even get anywhere? Are they lined up? Is that the, because that little parlay was only a few people. So I'm thinking about where people would be. Are they at the ready to fight at that moment that Missandei gets killed? Because if I'm Cersei and Tyrion crosses that line, walks up, hand to the queen, immediate, when she holds her hand up, I throw that down as fast as possible to give the sign, shoot those arrows into this little brother of mine. But that doesn't happen. Then this drama proceeds. He begs and, whatever, please, let's talk about this. She doesn't say a word. Then he turns around, walks back after Missandei gets killed, and they basically leave. How does not that not start a battle? How are you, this whole time, you're so hell-bent on fighting. Everybody's fighting. Now all of a sudden, battle rules matter, and all this war decorum, and we're gonna abide by, you know, we'll have a parlay, and nobody will break any rules. Like, come on, what is that? Like, she just shot a dragon from a ship with a big giant bolt from a giant crossbow, but messing them up in that little small group there, nah, she's not gonna have that. Like, how do you could have easily killed Dany, because she was in the background there. Could he easily kill Tyrion? It kind of doesn't make sense. So, talking about these battle arrangements, I think Axel might have been really onto something about time. We're not figuring there's something missing.
Yeah, I think that's just the show being the show, man. It's, you know, you don't get an episode 5 if you kill Daenerys there, right? So the shot was there, like you said. They know ballistas are everywhere. You know, they have them pretty much at their mercy. But like you said, there's probably some explanation we're going to get as to why, you know, they didn't just pull the trigger at that point. What it is, who knows? But yeah, I think it's just, you know, they just got to keep you interested for next week.
John, what do you think? Do you think that there's something missing in between here, like the Greyjoy army, something else?
I don't think there's really anything missing. I think it was kind of a little bit of an awkward time jump that, you know, like Axel and you were saying, that a lot of different things could have happened and discussions could have happened, but I think most of those discussions and that just weren't important enough to show, and they have a limited amount of time, so they're kind of just moving the plot forward. So I don't read a lot into it myself. But yeah, it is a little weird that, you know, I kept on thinking the same thing. I'm like, look at it, Tyrion. He's so close. I mean, anybody from up there could have taken him out. They had all those, you know, bolts that they're using for the dragons and everything. They could have done a lot of damage right there, but yeah, it's just maybe not the game they're playing.
Well, yeah, I think some of the time issue is going to be resolved simply by there's no obstruction going down to King's Landing, right? Like, there's no phrase to stop you. You know, there's no, like, you know, it's pretty much a straight march down there. So I think that's just a simple answer there, right? But, you know.
So while we're here, let's go back to a little bit with what Axel was saying and what I was kind of bringing up. With Tyrion possibly knowing something or posturing a different outcome. So this is kind of weird. I don't know if it was a misstep in the show. I don't know. But the battle ends and Euron comes back. Cersei's so happy, fluffs him up, tells him, here's the seed. All right? Euron's aware that's the baby. That's his baby. Tyrion walks up and in his speech is talking about, you got to do it for your kids. That's the one thing I've seen you love. The one thing I know you love, your children, and do it for your child. There's only a child left that's in her belly. So
how does he know?
Well, yeah. We know that he knew from that last conversation. But now Euron has to think how Tyrion knows. Cersei knows because you saw her face, and that's kind of why I think she did Missandei it. Was like, yo, we got to shut him up, because he kept saying it like twice or three times. And then, boom, you know, Missandei gets killed. But that's the shock. But we got to start thinking about, what's Euron going to do here? Is he going to believe her? Because as far as he knows, Tyrion's never been there in his time being there.
You never know. He could, Euron could be the one that in the end is fed up with the whole thing, right? And he could be the one that is the person that we're not even, you know, thinking could actually take out Cersei. Because you're right. I mean, it's not gonna take anything for him to put it together that it doesn't make sense that Tyrion would know that information. So he's gonna know that she was lying. I think we'll probably see that in the next episode. But I think that adds just more dimension to it. Not so much that, I don't think Tyrion did it intentionally, or I think it's just one of those things where somebody lets something slip that not everybody in the room knows about. And next thing you know, it's going to affect everybody, all the relationships.
I got a little bit of a different take there to John. What if Euron is simply like, you know what, who gives a shit? As long as everybody thinks it's mine, who really cares? You know what I mean? I think he might be that type of character where it doesn't really bother him either way, as long as he gets his main goal of, you know, I think ultimately Euron thinks he'll be able to manipulate Cersei and really rule over her. I don't think it's going to matter to Euron too much, as long as he's the one, you know, that's thought to be the father.
Wow. All right. Well, since you just basically thought my whole point was useless, I'm just kidding.
No,
let's talk about something else useless.
I also don't think Euron makes it too far, you know, from where we are anyways. So I just think ultimately that it's one of those things where, yeah, I think they're going to just kind of brush it off as, even if they do approach it, I just think he'll be of the mindset that he doesn't care. As long as he's attached to the crown, you know, that's good enough for him.
All right. Now, I'm just going to go right back to the chat here. And John and Roman are talking that whole thing is basically Cersei and Dany vying for the love of the people. And that's probably why it didn't escalate to madness. It would have lost respect of other lords if at a parlay they killed each other. I could buy that a little bit, but I think at this point, like, I don't know, you got to go in the way, you know, just like guerrilla warfare and just win shit. You can't win, you know, do this old school battle stuff. And I don't know. It's just somebody, you know, you got a dragon. Like, it's a different style of warfare now.
Somebody in the episode had said, I don't remember if it was Daenerys or Cersei, that let them see how the queen treats her people. Something similar to that. I don't know, John, if you remember, but during the episode, somebody, one of the two, mentioned that. So I think that's where the people in the chat, they actually make a good point that, you know, they parlayed just to show the lords, you know, that we're fair and even. But I just can't remember off the top of my head whether it was Dany or whether it was Cersei. And I think what was being discussed was, you know, all the people went into the Red Keep as kind of like a shield for Cersei, right? And then one of the two had mentioned, let them die so the people can see what a queen they have. I don't remember if it was Dany saying it about Cersei or Cersei saying it about Dany. So I guess that's where that idea comes from.
That was Cersei that said that. But then later on, you know, Tyrion just brought it up to her. You don't care about your people. You know, so he knows why she brought them in the Red Keep. So, you know, the theory of Tyrion flip-flopping sides is way far out there. That's, you know, because why would he say that again? Because it makes her look bad. But we never know how apeshit this plan is. You know, it might be burn everything to the ground, start over, and Cersei's on the ships. We don't know. But let's go back to, you know, what you said about my point being useless. I was like, a little offended.
That wasn't me.
No, I'm just kidding. But I thought about something useless. And that useless thing from here on out seems to be Bran. Did you guys find that utterly depressing? How he's like, all I think about now is what's in the past, mostly. And he just like got rolled off. Tyrion's like, hey, nice wheels. He's like, yeah, they were invented by somebody 2 centuries ago. All right, bye. And I'm like, holy shit, this kid's like really lost everything. And I don't like it, but do you guys see any use for Bran? Or is he like pushed off and shoved into the Citadel or some shit?
Yeah, so it's funny that you brought it up, because I think, like, if I was going to say overall for the season, what am I kind of most disappointed in or was looking forward to? I really wanted to see more you know, brand visions, right? I want him to go back in some time and show me a couple things, fill in a couple details here and there. I really miss that. You know, I was really hoping that we get at least two or three of those kind of trips back to kind of see how things were established and how characters were developed and enemies were created. But where we stand right now, I don't know. I don't think we're going to see anything like that. And it is going to be pretty disappointing, but you also think, okay, we've got two episodes left. Something's got to happen with Bran, you know, in these last two episodes, right? He's got to either become part of the tree or he's got to, something's got to happen there, right? I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, he's been one of my favorite characters through the whole series, right? Right up there with, you know, John and, not so much time, but in any way, yeah, it's a little disappointing that they're not kind of pushing his story forward, but I can't see what's left for him here. Like in terms of, again, just the show being the show, they're kind of emphasizing over and over that this is just who he is. This is who he's going to be. And there's really not much more to it. I do hope that like you said, John, he goes into, I don't know, that Weirwood tree network and just kind of, they have some explanation, but yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure which way they're going with it.
I mean, I feel like something should happen. He did so much. He went through so much. The transformation was foreseen. It was such a big deal. He's named after the guy that built the wall. You know, like, there's just so many pieces that seem like he should be either, like, respected better, put up on a pedestal more, have, like, maybe like a group of maesters protecting him, something like regal. And it doesn't seem like that's a big deal. And Bran doesn't make it seem like a big deal. And when you guys were just talking, it got me thinking about the name of the episode, The Last of the Starks. So Jon's not a Stark. Bran claims he's not a Stark. Basically, Arya seems like she's faceless. Like she's said she's doesn't have hopes of coming back. Not that she doesn't have hopes. She doesn't think she'll survive to come back. You know, she's given it up. Sansa's the last, you know, of the Starks. So,
yeah.
I don't know, thinking that line, if Bran's even necessary.
I think in the show he's not. I think he's served his purpose and, you know, they're just gonna, you know, remember the Godfather scene where the Godfather is just sitting in the garden and, you know, watching his tomatoes. I think that's kind of where Bran ends up, right? Just constantly plugged in and looking at the past and learning things. And, you know, there's also the possibility of thinking of a spinoff down the road, you know,
like
where they don't want to reveal too much about Bran right now. Who knows, right? I mean, it could be being saved for something like that.
Right. Yeah, I kind of think that Bran's chance to be more active in the storyline would have had to have happened more in that, you know, first or second episode to get us, you know, ready for the Night King. And so now, since that's all done, we are kind of at a lull for his character. And, you know, it's funny you brought up the Bran the Builder thing because, you know, that was always like one of those things. It's like, oh, I'd really love for him to go all the way back, right? And like have Bran see Bran and see the building of the wall. But it's kind of like, you know, the Dharma Initiative kind of thing. It's one of those things that we kind of wish we saw more details of and saw elaborated on. But
fan fiction.
Maybe some of that stuff's better in our heads than them actually doing it, but it is always super exciting in a series when you get those moments, right? Like where you're like, oh my gosh, there's that thing that I wouldn't want to see. So, you never know.
There's a few styles of what people like, you know, and I have a friend loves the Marvel movies, just like I do, hates any origin story that's longer than like 15 minutes. If it's more than 15 minutes of origin, he doesn't like the movie. And me, I'm like, I'd rather an hour and 25 minutes of origin and 25 minutes of fighting. But, you know, I don't know if that's what a lot of people like. Because me, I would totally love, like Sam, to read books for an hour in the Citadel for an episode. But it's not logical. But dude, that stuff's cool to me. I want to see, I love the history and lores on the Blu-ray. I want to see Bran's, you know, flashbacks more. I want to see that conversation he had with Tyrion. I want to know the roots. I want to know more of the Children of the Forest. I want to know more of what he saw in the Weirwood, other than us freeze framing every single clip, you know, on the internet and on Reddit, seeing what he saw. But I don't, unfortunately, I'm with you guys, I don't think we're going to get that anymore. I hope maybe, yeah, maybe he does something spectacular. You know, maybe one more piece of information is so helpful.
Yeah, I think.
Good.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think one nice moment we might be able to have is maybe a little something between Bran and Sam, just because they have an obvious relationship that would make sense as like kind of like lovers of history and documenting the time period they've been in. So it would be nice if they did a scene together there that kind of brought a conclusion to both of their characters.
Yeah, it would be, yeah, that'd be something kind of tie loose ends up with them, right? Because it looks like Sam's staying, for now anyways, at the wall. At Winterfell, right? So, but I honestly think that, you know, it is a business in a sense, right? So I could see HBO holding back on certain things this season, knowing full well that they have other projects in development, right? So, and I think one of them is it The Long Night that they're trying to come out with?
Yeah, I forget which one got scrapped. I know Godman's just got scrapped, so I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, but it could be where, you know, somebody like Bran and Sam kind of tell that story, right? And they give us more information down the road in a new series. So, you know, I'm also kind of keeping that in mind that, you know, they're thinking of the future too, right? As a franchise, right?
Jim, are you a marketer by trade?
No, I'm not.
No, because that does make sense. You know, in the grand scheme,
it's a business, man.
It is a business. You're right, 100%. So if they can put some dribbles in here and say, you know, HBO said we need this in there. You know, you guys want another show from us, put this in because it'll help us propel something in the future. It might not be anything to us right now. Like, we might just be like, ooh, what's that? And we'll never get it. But it leaves a hole open for the future. All right.
Yeah.
Jim the Marketer. You got a future.
Sometimes the simple answer could just be the simple answer, right?
Yep.
Question for you guys. Brienne and Jamie scene, right? At the end where Jamie says, I'm hateful, just like Cersei, I took it as he's telling Brienne, I'm hateful in the sense that I'm going to go kill Cersei. You know, I have the same hate and revenge she has, and it's rubbed off on me, and now I'm going to use it against her. In the scene, it made it look like Brienne thought that it seemed like Jaime has to be with Cersei. So what do you guys think? What's the reading on that scene? Is it Jaime is hateful towards Cersei, or is it Jaime is, you know, like Cersei and he wants to go be with her? What do you guys think?
John, take it.
Just to think, you know, like in that scene, I think I took it as that he felt like he had unfinished business, right? Like he obviously has a connection with Brienne, but you know, in the end, he can't let himself go to that to be happy, right? When he knows what he's done in the past. So I think he's kind of, you know, got to make atonement for it in another way. And I think his way of doing that is possibly, you know, taking out Cersei or ending the war somehow, you know, with less bloodshed. So that's kind of how I took it. The big thing I walked away from that scene too was like, I mean, there's just spectacular acting in it. And the look on Brienne's face when she's leaving, and that it's just like when he's leaving, it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it was, that was, you know, gut wrenching.
Yeah, I didn't care for her character throughout most of the series, but this season she's just knocking it out. It's, you know, she's been fantastic, like you said. Great, great scenes with her.
So my answer, when I first watched it, I thought Jamie was just being a dick and was like, I'm done. Like, once he heard that Cersei lost, he was, I thought, like, he snapped. And he's like, I got to go be with her. And what he's saying was true. But then when I watched it the second time, I was like, nah, I'm definitely not. Because I'll date myself here a little bit as far as movies. And you might get this reference. He basically, Harry and the Hendersons, Brienne. If you know Harry and the Hendersons, like, the tough part to get Harry to go back in the woods, he had to smack him and be like, I don't want you here. I don't like you, Harry. I hate you. He didn't mean it, but he needed to say it. So Harry got upset and left. And I think that's the way, that was Jamie's way of telling Brienne, like, I got to go. I might die. Forget about me. Don't fall in love with me, because I know virgins rarely fall in love with the first person they sleep with. Duh. I know. But, you know, that was his way, because I do feel he's going to go for redemption. Now, they might screw us all up and be like, you know, he might come in like Golden Hand Ninja Warrior and start doing some crazy shit, but I doubt it, because that would be the final redemption. To me, I was more than satisfied with this episode just on the mere fact that Jamie admitted the list of the shit I've been reminding people the reasons not to like Jamie for. And he put it all out in front of Brienne. And when I watched it the second time, I'm like, he wouldn't have put that out like that unless he was really trying to atone for some, for his stuff inside. Because maybe Brienne made him feel good. The joining a battle of winning epic proportions of epic consequences made him feel good. Not being the top dog, being the guy that, you know, had to follow someone's command. And all this humbled him. And I finally, like, kind of like Jamie a little bit. Like, little bit. If you're on YouTube, you're seeing this small amount that, let me see, I can barely, not, can't even fit a pen through. So I like Jamie that much, but I like the acting. I love the way they're making the arc go, if it goes this way. If I'm talking different shit next week, don't hold me to it, because this pen might not even fit the point through.
I think kudos to you, Tim, for being the first person in the DVR podcast network to reference Harry and the Hendersons. So, I mean, for that alone, you know, I think you deserve an award. So I also wanted to bring up, since we already went over it, but, you know, my prediction, an observation from 2 weeks ago, that Gilly was pregnant. Oh, yeah.
That's right. You.
Oh, man.
Put that right out there, right away. Yeah. That's right. Nice job.
That's my only success, so I've got to try to, you know, milk it for all I can.
And John the gynecologist, right?
Oh.
Just amateur.
Yeah.
He knows nothing except down there.
Except when women are pregnant, yeah.
Oh, shit. So, yeah. All right, we've gotten pretty far. I got one more topic I want to bring up, but I'm going to put it to you guys first before I bring that up and close the show out. So we'll go to John, and if you got one more thing you want to bring up to discuss, bring it up.
Let me see. I don't know. I've pretty much covered everything that I had thought about. I mean, I don't know how much you guys talked about the scene where Tyrion and Sansa were up on top of the battlements. that was a great moment, you know, like where they had their heart to heart talk. And again, I thought the acting in that scene was pretty spectacular. Sansa's really, to me, like become the standout person from the season so far in terms of like her overall character. I think she right now is standing in the best position to come away the leader, really. But that was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, it's so we're talking about the scene where she reveals the secret.
Yep.
Yeah, so you kind of bring up two things for me. So things that were left kind of off screen, right? It would have been really, really good to see Tyrion's initial reaction to it. And same thing with Jon revealing to Sansa and Arya who he is. You know, the scene itself, yeah, it was good. Like, you know, she was teary-eyed. It was almost like she was holding back and, you know, fighting until the last second, right? Sansa gave a great performance there where, and then just she finally kind of gives in and says, you know what, let me just tell him and see what happens. So, yeah, it was a great scene. But related to that, it's the things that were left off screen were just kind of, you know, you wish you had those moments. Because like you said, I think most, well, I don't know if most people, but, you know, I like the character growth, right? The character interactions more so than the battle scenes. I do like the odd episode, obviously, with the big battle stuff, but some of the stuff that was left out of this episode would have been really good to see.
I'm pretty sure that's why we watch most of it, you know,
why
we get sucked in. You know, the magic, little bit, dribs and drabs, even the battles, dribs and drabs. When they happen, they're epic, but they wouldn't mean anything if we didn't know these characters. And they were all so foreign for us that it's definitely the characters that draw us in.
Yeah, when Sansa was there and she, you know, said, you know, the Starks don't ever do well. You know, the Stark men never come out well when they go to King's Landing. And Tyrion does that line back at her about, well, Jon always likes to say, you know, that he's not a Stark. And she gets that look on her face like, oh, I know something. Yeah. And it's killing me. That was great, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And interacting, like you could see, at that moment, I'm pretty sure if I remember, I only seen the episode once this week, but she had tears in her eyes, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so she was, you know, it took everything out of her, I guess, to just kind of finally say it. I still wish she didn't say it, but, you know, saying it kind of leads us to where we are. So I guess it all works out in the end.
Yeah, guess it all works out in the end.
Well, hey, sorry, Tim. Just one last thing here. So I thought it was kind of funny when they were in the Godswood and Jon tells them to swear, right? And you look at Arya and she clearly says, "I swear." When Sansa says it, to me, it seemed like she said "swear" instead of "I swear," and it brought me back to, like, you guys probably did this too when we were kids. With my brother, we used to do it all the time. You'd say, "I swear to God" instead of "God." C instead of G. So then it didn't count after, right? And I almost felt like Sansa said swear instead of "I swear." And then that kind of led her to, you know, because again, the North, very honorable, you know what I mean? So I just kind of laughed. As soon as I saw her say what looked like to me, she just said swear. I'm like, oh my God, she's pulling that trick where we were kids. We say, "I swear to God" instead of "God."
She was like, yeah, John, I swear.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Exactly. So I thought that was just kind of funny, but I might be reading it wrong, obviously.
I think you're reading it wrong. I think Sansa's just an asshole and
broke
her promise, because that shit spiraled out of control. Within two scenes, she's, you know, telling Tyrion. Tyrion's telling Varys. It's gone.
Yeah. It's setting up a good next episode, that's for sure, man.
All right. So I want to hit my final point that I kind of felt was the overarching theme of the episode, which is why I broke out my flat red Tamiya paint XF7. It's red here. You could see it. And the red, for me, was for broken hearts. this episode was just straight heartbreak. And it wasn't heartbreak that, like, you're like, oh, it's so sad. Oh. But it was heartbreak. You had so many pairs split up and say almost final goodbyes. You had Tyrion and the Dream of the Queen. Now, I don't know if you picked this up, but during that Tyrion-Varys conversation, Tyrion almost looked sad because Varys was right. So that was one I picked up on. Jaime, Brienne, obviously for Brienne, completely heartbreaking. Jaime, I'm sure, just as much. Arya, Gendry, I don't think she wanted to do it. She probably didn't care as much as him. He was heartbroken. Missandei and Grey Worm, obvious, for obvious reasons. Just so many things broken up. And, you know, starting from the beginning, you know, when we see the sadness, Daenerys whispered, probably, you know, everybody's like, oh, what did Daenerys whisper on the online social media? And who cares what she whispered? She probably said, I love you, because that's what he probably wanted to hear. But another heartbreaking thing, and another dragon, the mother losing her dragon. And you just have all these points of heartbreak. And to me, like Tormund, another one. Tormund, his heart was broken. He's professing his love to that guy sitting there at the table, the Hound, and he's like, ah, you know, my heart's broken. And he goes back to the north. You had Summer. I mean, yeah, right?
Ghost.
I'm sorry, not Summer. Ghost. His heart's broken. John doesn't even pat him on the head. And he's like, peace out. You're going north. I hope you like the cold, even though you got used to it here. It's just heartbreak all around. And I feel like maybe I'm still feeling the anxiety from the battle, that I wanted to see everybody calming down. But as it's calming, it's causing more heartbreak. And as I'm looking at this and thinking about it, I'm like, everything's fucked up again. And during the summer, I texted Axel. I feel like the point of this show, you know, that we were doing our rewatch and we were pretty much lined up. And I said, I feel like the point of this show is that humans fuck everything up. And I'm almost wanting to root for the Night King. And again, everybody's heart's broken here. You guys help me out. What do you think of this?
I think it's some serious tough love episode, man. I mean, you're right. There is heartbreak all over the place. And maybe they're just getting in the bittersweet part that we're supposed to know happens in the end, that it's a bittersweet ending. So maybe this is the bittersweet. Maybe that last episode won't be as painful as they've kind of let it on to be. So maybe there'll be a little bit of hope in the end.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the final goodbyes, right? Like, they kind of did the same thing with the battle against the Night King, in a sense, right? So it's you know, good acting all around. It pulls at your heartstrings. You know, you're thinking of all these characters that spent all this time together, and now suddenly they, you know, they literally could be there. Well, we know they're kind of the final goodbyes because, you know, the season's winding down and we kind of know everything's coming to an end. So I think this one has more pull on it. But yeah, Tim, like you said, it's that whole wheel thing, right? It's much, and think about it, they're all becoming their parents, like they said many seasons ago, you know. The father becomes a son or something like that. So yeah, I think it's just, they're the ones that are messed up, right?
Yeah, and it's, there's things, you know, consciously we try to break that, like, oh, my parents did this, I'm not doing this. It's, I don't know about you guys, I just hit 40 and I could probably make a list of stuff that I do that my dad did, and I never thought I'd be doing shit like this. You know, just little mannerisms and jokes I'm copying and stupid corny jokes and things like that. But it's, you know, I don't know, it's kind of cool in a way. But if you have a bad scenario, I could, you know, like we're seeing on this show with a lot of these people, it doesn't work in your favor.
Yeah, it's tough to, you know, like, they were all brought up you know, a specific way in a very specific world. So it's hard for them to ultimately kind of leave that all behind, right? And, you know, them saying their goodbyes, it's one of those things where, you know, it's, I'm kind of at a loss for words here, but it's, yeah. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I was trying to say there. Sorry, lost my train of thought.
Come on, John. Pick up the pace. Bring me back up a little bit. My heart's starting to break. I want to play Boys to Men and shit.
I guess I would just say we kind of knew that these last episodes were going to be tough, and this is the proof of that. And, like I said, I think we'll feel better once we get a couple more kills under everybody's belt when we finally get rid of Cersei. So don't despair too much about the losses along the way right now. They still got the ultimate goal ahead of us, and we'll see what happens in the next two episodes.
All right. That's a good way to wrap it up. I like that. Final words from Mr. John, almost in Canada. Close to Canada. We got Jim from Canada and John from close to Canada. That's how we doing it tonight.
And there's no more wall, man. There's nothing for us to protect for you guys anymore.
That's right. Trump is so pissed. Oh, my gosh. Oh, wait. He wasn't built one up there. It was the other way. Yeah. Never mind. All right. So I got you guys on. Anybody still in the chat? I got this cup here. I hope it's not too annoying on the mic, but I wrote down all the names of all the participants of the chat tonight, and I'm going to pick their names out of this little cup I got here. Fold them. It's on the screen for the YouTube, so you can verify by the auditors. What do we got here? What do we got here? Liz A. Liz A. We want you to send an email with your address to podcastwinterfell@gmail.com because you just won a Hand of the King or Queen pin. That's right. You could use it however you want. It's the little pin with the hand and the point that sticks out that the Hand of the Queen and the Hand of the King wear in Game of Thrones. And that's presented by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. So, Liz, I know you were saying some good stuff. Plus, oh, look at this. She made a comment about my Harry and the Henderson comment. I like it. She called it white fanging. Oof. That's another term for it. All right, I like it. But Liz, you won. Thanks for hanging out in the chat. Sometimes it pays to discover. That's not a sponsor. So, you know, it pays to chat. How about that? You know what I'm saying? All right. So I want to thank everybody that joined in the chat, everybody that subscribes, everybody that tweets, everybody that sends in feedback. Remember, if you want to get on the next show next Monday or the finale show, send an email, podcastwinterfell@gmail.com, and tell us, tell me, be like, Tim, I got a lot to say, but I didn't know I can get on. Well, you're on. I got room for you. I'll make a priority, especially if it's a new voice. I want to hear some fresh voices, so I don't have to talk as much. But we had some familiar voices with us tonight. John and Jim, thank you both for coming on. And say a little outro, and then we're going to be outro.
Thanks a lot for having me on tonight, Tim. I appreciate it.
Yeah, right on. Same here, man. Simple, nice and easy. You know, you guys are the last, well, first and last, as far as I know, that kind of have the interaction that you guys do with Colin Show, so I really appreciate it. All the content you guys are pumping out lately, great job. You know, it's good to see you guys kind of branching out a little bit. So kudos to you guys. And just to, you know, all the people that, you know, in a sense, gripe about the show, you know, enjoy it for what it is, man. It's the last couple of episodes. We're not going to see a show like this for a long time. Take it all in stride. You know, have fun with it. And Valar Morghulis.
Valar Dulharis, brother.